Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 11th of August. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have a terrific panel, terrific show today. Not only are we going to be talking about what's going on in the world with our panel, we are doing a little bit of a shorter panel segment this morning because the second part of the show, we're going to be doing a program on Tanglewood. Normally, Alan and I would be at on the press porch at Tanglewood and be doing one of our programs. We do two or three a year over there. And this year, we're doing like they're doing and doing it virtually. So at 10:30, Mark Volpe will join Alan and I, and then we have a whole raft of wonderful guests coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. So we'll have a somewhat shortened panel discussion this morning at 10:30, and then we'll be talking all things Tanglewood coming up in just an hour and a half or so. All right, let us go to introducing everybody. WAMC's Alan Chartok is on the line. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I am on the line, and I am very happy to be here, and I want to just say hello to everybody because you're all wonderful.
Yes. Most of you. Yes. Yes. Most of you are wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
Alan's going to
introduce me today.
Uh-oh.
Rosemary, you always have that
You should introduce me next so I can leaven that.
Well, investigative journalist and adjunct professor at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo is here with a song in her heart and sunshine pouring from her pores. Good morning.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm not. I'm barely making it. I hate being confined. I hate this virus. I hate politics. What is there to be so sunny about?
Well, we're all together.
That's good, honey, you mother. My mother's listening to this, too, laughing at us.
Our good friend, chairman of Capital District Latinos, Dan Irizarry, joins us as well. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Live from the pandemic in Saratoga Springs.
Our spa city correspondent of the pandemic. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I think Malcolm is on the line. We were missing him for a moment, but counterterrorism expert and best-selling author Malcolm Nance. Good morning, sir. How are you? All right. See, we didn't have him, and then he connected, and then we heard him. And Malcolm, are you there? All right. Well, we'll work
on. See what I mean?
Yeah.
We do, Rosemary.
Well, we'll work on that. He was there, and we looked down the app, and it says that a human has connected, and we just assumed that human was Malcolm, but maybe we were wrong. All right, we'll work on that and figure it out, and be right back to you with Mr. Nance, I hope. In the meantime, let me remind you that you can be part of the program, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Malcolm, are you there? Malcolm's not there. All right. We'll try it again.
Hope he hasn't been abducted by
I'm trying to be
secret police, of course.
Oh, no. Malcolm, I hear you. Are you there?
You got to push the button.
All right. Malcolm, can you hear us? All right. Well, we could do this all morning, and doesn't it seem like we've been doing it all morning already? But let's move ahead, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Malcolm. We'll do some tech work on our side and see if we can get connected to him. Although on our side, all things are a go. I think he needs to connect, but we'll give him a call and see what's going on. Anyway, good morning, everybody. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Okay, let us begin with the story that keeps on giving, and that is a nation is trying to deal with the Trump executive orders. The nation's governors are very concerned about these executive moves and the implementation of them. They are calling on Congress to act. On Capitol Hill, meanwhile, lawmakers are trading blame as talks show no signs of life. The nation's governors raised concerns on a bipartisan basis on Monday about implementing President Trump's new executive action aimed at extending enhanced unemployment insurance and called on Congress to act instead. But on Capitol Hill, negotiations showed no signs of life as Democrats and Republicans traded accusations about their failure to reach a deal during 2 weeks of talks that collapsed on Friday. In their statement, the governors pointed to significant administrative burdens and costs associated with attempting to implement a new plan announced over the weekend, which would attempt to provide $400 weekly emergency unemployment benefits, with states required to apply for the funds and pay a quarter of the cost. The statement was issued by the National Governors Association. Who is the chairman of the National Governors Association? Well, that would be Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor of New York. He made the statement along with Vice Chairman Asa Hutchinson, the Republican governor of Arkansas. The best way forward is for Congress and the administration to get back to the negotiating table and come up with a workable solution, was written by the pair yesterday. There was little sign that was going to happen. In dueling speeches on the Senate floor Monday afternoon, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Minority Leader Chuck Schumer each insisted that the other's party refusal to compromise was the reason that no deal had been struck on a new coronavirus relief bill. That from the Washington Post, Alan Chartok.
Well, you know, here's the thing. We do know that Trump considers himself the master of the deal, the art of the deal. So he's put basically an untenable, potentially dictatorial, totalitarian move on the table, which is, I'm not going to wait for Congress to work this out because it's their job. I'm going to do it myself. But in doing it, he's installed a whole bunch of details that that are not quite what they appear to be, and so he and I think everybody else is waiting for somebody to give in here. He's waiting for the Democrats. I've always thought that this would they wanted a trillion. The Republicans, the Democrats wanted three. I always said it would come out at two, and I still think it will. Now, Trump always looks for the idea that he made it all happen. So in the end, I believe that they'll do what they need to do and that there will be this compromise, and they'll stop all this nonsense with giving the president powers that he clearly doesn't have.
Rosemary.
I continue to be interested in the role of Mark Meadows in all this, the Tea Party crackpot who's been put in charge of negotiations in lieu of Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, who, despite being a Trump loyalist, was able to talk and indeed came out with several bills working with Schumer and Pelosi. Mark Meadows has a reputation as a disruptor, a chaotic spoiler, and that's what he's done this time without regard to what people, Americans, need as far as jobs and support while there are no jobs in crisis and protection. He doesn't care apparently about any of that. He was the architect of this idea to have Trump take action with executive orders, which are completely not conservative, not a Republican idea, have lots of problems. The orders he signed, there's not money to fulfill them, and it leaves out a whole bunch of stuff that never got addressed, like how do you support states who can't afford their regular jobs plus the extra work added on by the corona help. So it's he is disrupting not just negotiations right now, but really the functioning of government. Why are we running government by executive fiat? Mark Meadows is the bad guy, and Trump, of course.
Of course, when in the reporting, I believe it was the Washington Post, but in the reporting from the about Mark Meadows, they say that Nancy Pelosi has been calling him the enforcer, meaning that he was there to enforce what the president wanted. which is something we talked about last week. I'm gonna try this one more time subtly. Malcolm, are you there?
Yeah, I'm trying to be. Can you
okay,
hear me?
Okay, I can. Hey. Yeah, there we go. That's great. Have you been following our conversation?
Yeah, sort of. But, you know, when it comes to the Trump administration, care about the American citizen, we all know that. The amount of money that they're proposing here is terrible. I mean, you have Senator Johnson who says he hopes all of this collapses and that no more money be given out to the American citizens because it costs too much. I mean,
because he's got his.
Oh, okay. Well, that's their entire philosophy, right? The libertarian philosophy. I've got mine, screw you. So, you know, they don't care whether everyone gets kicked out of their houses. They see it as an opportunity for booming real estate to worthy people. I was stopped on the street this week by a woman who's from Brooklyn, and she said that there is a mass eviction of all rent owners who are behind. And what I find fascinating is, who is going to move into these places? No one has the money to do that. People from downstate are moving to upstate in droves. Literally every house around me has sold. So the Trump administration doesn't care about the small person at all. We all know that. It's kabuki. And if they can hurt us to make their rubes think that will be, you know, Trump is a tough guy, they will hurt every American that they can.
Let us go to Dan Arizari. Dan, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Well, I've had far too much time to stew in all of this horrendous broth here. And I have a conspiracy theory that I think is no longer a conspiracy theory anymore, because what used to pass as hyperbole once upon a time is now just common discourse, right? So let me be paranoid and say, I think this is, you left one out, Rosemary, one player out, and that's Miller.
Stephen Miller.
And I think Stephen Miller. I don't think that this is just a Mark Meadows move. I think it goes back to the whole Jared Kushner issue of the memo that was circulated about how to deal with the pandemic early on, in which they shelved quickly when they realized that at that time only blue states were being affected by the pandemic. So I think what's happening here is, this is just as Ebenezer Scrooge once said, if they want to die, let them die and so decrease the surplus population. I think this is about letting blue states starve. It's about destroying the democratic infrastructure in those states, because the governors there cannot, as Governor Cuomo has said, laughed about the extra $100 for this unemployment. So it's of a piece with the Stephen Miller doctrine of basically waging war against black and brown communities. So that's how I see it at this point. And I no longer feel that it's a conspiracy theory. I just think that this is part of the insidious plot to wage war on black and brown communities and blue states.
Wow.
So Dan, let me follow up, if I may, and ask you, what do they think they're going to get out of that? In other words, is it all to motivate the base, that they go after the black and brown community, that the hatred among the base for those groups is so great that they think that by piling it on this way, that they can make a little political hay? What is the motivation?
I agree with you. It's hard to fathom, but when you look at the trending of what's going on in these blue states around the emergency state that they're in about around their budgets, and the insistence of the Trump administration to say that they just are badly run states. Of course, they never talk about Kentucky or any of those other places where their faithful unmasked masses are cheering him on. But they just seem to be, pursuing this policy of starving blue states. And what I think, Alan, to your point is, that people will look the other way if they think that sanctuary cities and places like Portland or other places where the president is now painting them as lawless places, where we have to send in, camouflaged, unmarked law enforcement people. This is what's happening. They're waging war on democratic states, and it's not a secret. And I think it does rile the base up. And I think the base is saying, "Oh, you know, we'll just continue life as we knew it. You know, we'll go to Sturgis and 200,000 of us unmasked, and we'll import the virus back. And a pox on you Democrats, because you will not take away. You know, what did he say in the Rose Garden the other day? They're coming after religion and God. They're going to hurt God. They're going to hurt your Second Amendment rights. I mean, this is craziness. This is insanity."
What does it say, Alan, do you think, though, there is some bipartisan concern here amongst both Republican and Democratic governors who are footing the bill for this? What role is that going to play?
Well, I think it's huge. I mean, you know, Andrew Cuomo, first we were hearing it was $16 billion in the hole. His last words were that we're $14 billion in the hole. $1 billion here, $1 billion here, there. Pretty soon, big money. No, he doesn't have it. He just doesn't have it. Now, if Trump thinks that by embarrassing him and making him pay what he doesn't have, that's a good way to go. I keep wondering, not about the Reds, because Reds meaning the Reds. Reds used to be a different term. Now Reds mean the Republicans.
Right.
And I get it. They're where they're going to be. They don't want the blacks. They don't want the browns. They don't want people having political power.
I got to pause you, Alan, because we have to take a break. But we'll be right back.
What I had in my mind.
We'll talk about the Reds right after this. Listening to the music of the Boston Pops and John Williams, and of course all part of our Tanglewood Morning, which we will have a special broadcast from 10:30 to noon today, when we will talk to all kinds of cool people who will be working on all things Tanglewood. We have the playlist up this morning, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, Alan, you were talking about what this all means for these states, and ultimately the governors who are both Republican and Democrat, who are going to be, you know, holding the purse strings here and have to figure out how to do all this.
I've been very interested in what Dan said. Yes, okay.
I need you mic'd.
I know.
There we go.
I can't understand why.
Okay. Now I can hear you.
Yeah. I get the red part of it. The Reds are, you know, pro-Trump. They don't move off the dime. They are what they are. But it's the purples. I've been saying it's the purples, the people in the middle all the time. They do not want race war in this country. I know that. They are ready to do a compromise, and they are the people who will really be affected. So I'm thinking it's still a dumb thing for Trump to be doing and his compatriots. I cannot figure that they can't figure that out for themselves.
He wants to be on Mount Rushmore. Not only can he not figure it out, he thinks what he's doing is fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird story too. I mean, not at all unsurprising, but a weird story.
But he does love to be outrageous, really outrageous at all costs. And it's as if that doesn't cost him anything in credibility, in trust, in anybody listening to a word he has said. So as I mentioned this morning, if there was a fracas outside the White House and somebody got shot, I don't know, Joe, whether we still know who got shot and what they were trying to do. But they moved the president out and they moved him back in. On this program, somebody wrote in the other day, just wait till Trump pulls a stunt like that and lays it out. I'm not saying that that's what happened. I'm only saying because he is so incredible, Nobody believes a word that is coming out of that White House.
Yeah, there's actually some study and some proof of that now of that these outrageous statements that used to kind of enthrall all of us for a while are now just not resonating much because it's just so much and it's just another day at the office. Malcolm, when you think about this and you look at where we go from here and the possibility of actually getting something done for the people who desperately need it.
Well, it would be absolutely wonderful if we could get something done for people who desperately need it. But as you just said, you know, we have a situation where outrageous is what's playing in the media. And Trump seems to think that he now really understands that. I find that fascinating, particularly in light of yesterday's press conference, which if there hadn't been a shooting, I would have surmised that he had made that up. Because he, for the last week, I don't know if you guys have been watching conservative media, but the people that do it for me have been saying on Fox News, he has been pushing very hard, and at Bedminster, the enemy, the media as the enemy of the press, of the people. And, you know, I think that there's going to come a time we'll make that point in a very broad way, whether it's kicking out the entirety of the Washington Press Corps from the White House room or people who aren't part of OANN. So all of that being said, the outrageous plays for him, but it's lost its oomph because, you know, we've all got Trump fatigue syndrome, right? I'm talking about him every day, and everybody asks me, is your next book going to be about Trump? Absolutely not, right? What I want a book to be, all of us getting together in the next 80 some odd days and saving the American experiment, saving democracy. Wish Amen. The media would do more on that than the fact that this buffoon who yesterday proved himself to be an utter disgraceful moron when saying that, you know, the 1918 flu.
1917.
I didn't want to justify
Don't correct it.
Go you know, ahead. But he's saying that the 19th ended
Thank
World
God
War II, not Hiroshima, Nagasaki, or the fall of Berlin by Soviet forces that all the rest of us rudes who have education understand. This is where we are. And I mean, it's almost as if, you know, he does these deliberately, but he doesn't. The man is just plain stupid, and we will all suffer for it if this year he wins re-election.
Dan?
It is insane. I can't even begin to fathom how somebody in the highest office in the land can confuse the First World War and the Second World War. I think any fourth grader...
He doesn't know what they are, that's how. It really doesn't.
Any fourth grader in public school would know those dates. I mean, this is just insane. I think that, as Malcolm said, the emperor's clothes are now, you know, accepted by everyone to be missing. I think the media, though, does need to do a better job at this. I mean, they're not given in this current format of these press conferences any ability to ask piercing questions, because little Donald Trump takes his jacks and storms off the podium when women reporters press him on certain questions. So the spectacle is just growing, is becoming more absurd every day. But the problem is that people are dying while he's playing games, rhetorical games, spectacles like signing not even executive orders, but MOUs, as the press has finally let us know about. And this is really theater of the absurd gone on steroids. This is
the real question here is, can he get reelected? You know, everybody understands who he is. The more outrageous he is, the more he thinks he's captured what he needs to capture in terms of public attention. And somebody just said, and I think it's quite right, unless he's reelected. Well, the very fact that he comes close, the very fact that he might get reelected is so scary. I remember being on the train with Roselle in Italy and asking about Berlusconi, who was a similar type fool. And the women who didn't speak any English, when I said, what about Berlusconi, they all started to laugh. They thought it was hysterical, you know, but he kept winning. This is something that is very troublesome to me.
Alan, if I could interject, Trump has the ability to harness the hatred of the stupid. And these people who vote for him, who are my neighbors here in Columbia County, you know, I've got the first Biden flag up here. It's not a flag. It's an 8-foot banner on the way to Walmart. I encourage everyone to go start flying their flag. You know, the people down the street from me, though, literally the car that has, you know, the house that has 7 cars in the front lawn, not that there's anything wrong with that, but they think this man is their champion. He is the leader of the white male tribe. Total and absent forever, no matter how big a minority they are. Silent majority. And I'm going to silent. And I think to win, because whether apathy comes in here, it'll depend greatly on Joe Biden's pick this week. If he doesn't pick Kamala Harris, he may lose this election. Just boom, flat lose this election, because the energy in the African-American community is behind her. And not Susan Rice, whom I know and think is a lovely person. But this election has to be 2008 times two for us to blow the margins out, or Donald Trump will pull a full Belarus and will just say, you know, no, I won the election and that's all there is to it. And then convince governors to get their electors to vote for him.
But doesn't the role of the post office become so critical at this juncture right now? I mean, yeah, I think people should start demonstrating outside post offices and showing their support for the post office and the unions, the post office union, because this, I don't want to say the word on WAMC, but this clown is really threatening our democracy by doing what he's doing with his postmaster general, who donated him and his wife $30 million to the Trump campaign. I mean, come on, people, stand up for yourselves, stand up for your post office. See your when you see your mailman on the stoop, give him a hug. Well, from 6 feet away.
Well, not in our case, it's a her.
Yeah, and yeah. Be careful. Sorry. Don't get in trouble.
Quick point about the post office.
Yeah.
I get my medicine through Express Scripts through the military healthcare system, TRICARE.
There you go.
The VA has slowed down their deliveries. This is going to kill people who don't get their medicines, you know, their dry medicines as opposed to, you know, things like insulin. But this is going to hurt people. They don't care. You mentioned Stephen Miller 5 minutes ago. Stephen Miller is just rank evil. Okay, this is the guy who I joked on Real Time with Bill Maher that, you know, Bill had put a picture up of the Nazi ideologue Goebbels, and I shouted out, baby Goebbels. He really is. I really think this guy, if we win this election and we get into that White House, I think there will be war crimes level things that we're going to discover about Stephen Miller, starting with putting babies in cages. And I've said this on this air, I suspect we will find that there will be a Vannesi conference document where they just decided 4 months ago to let Americans die and let coronavirus try to get herd immunity. This man is just rank evil, and he disgraces me and my honor of my family's service for these centuries by his mere presence in the White House. These people have, amen. I mean, that's one guy that has to go to prison.
We can rant on and on about the evil in the White House, starting with Trump Miller and Jared, and we have done that time after time. The truth is, and we pointed this out just a little while ago, are that there's a lot of support for this. George Conway has an amazing article today, a column, in which he says, I still believe in the president. And he puts down one line after another, one paragraph or another, all the things that Trump has done that people still support him with. Do you remember a time in this country when Gerald Ford made a gaffe during a debate and said that Eastern Europe was not under the thrall of Russia? And when he did that, there were headlines all over. People were shocked. They couldn't believe they had such a man who wanted to be president who was so stupid. And he was doomed from that moment. Trump has done millions of times worse than that. And nothing. They still support him. So to talk about listening to them and understanding their angst and reaching an accommodation with them seems ridiculous. To blame the media is crazy because all of his gaffes have come out because of the media, and they continue to go after his illegal activities and his corruption, and it makes no difference. That is not a press issue. There is something basically wrong with America, American society, our education, the way we raise people, our racism, something a lot different. And I also do want to say I agree with Malcolm about it's got to be Kamala. There was a note to Biden from a group of black activists saying, you know, black women have done their share. They have done more than their share. And it is time now to recognize them and their contribution. Give them more than lip service. They want a representative. She's qualified. She's amazing. Just I don't understand why we keep dragging it out.
All right.
Okay.
We have a lot of letters, and I want to get to those, and we can continue our conversation as we go through those. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go through this, and we'll keep talking about this and other subjects. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Armeo, and Dan Irizarry on the program this morning. We'll be right back. Alan, I cut you off right before the break. I think you were going to talk about Rosemary's statement on the VP and making a decision soon.
Well, yes, I was. I get it. And I'm a little bit concerned about Biden. Now, I have always thought that Harris would be an ideal candidate for all kinds of reasons. There's always somebody who says, well, she was a prosecutor or she did this or that. But I think she's tough, she can be president, and she's well-known in this country. So what I don't get is if Biden doesn't have her, and he says, well, you know, I got to be, and the implicit message is, I got to be able to get along with somebody. Well, Lyndon Johnson, as I've said many times, didn't get along with Jack Kennedy. But Jack Kennedy knew he wanted to be president, and he did what he had to do. So I'm somewhat concerned, and I'm watching this very carefully, that Biden does pick Harris for exactly the reason that Rosemary and others have laid out.
Part of the reason is an amazingly rich field from which to select. As Malcolm pointed out, Susan Rice. The other black woman in the field, I would include Stacey Abrams as well as any of them. I mean, there's not one woman on that list that I would say, oh, God, not her. And so he should be taking a lot of time. And it's kind of artificial that we're pushing him since vice presidential picks are frequently not made until the time of the convention. So this is kind of artificial. But there's a lot riding on this because it's a historic pick. It's the first woman of color. I want Kamala Harris simply to see her debate Pence. That would be worth the price of admission the whole election.
Does anybody think that some of this isn't just theater? That, you know, he gets Gretchen Whitmore to come in for an interview. I mean, I think that's just smoke. I think that the decision has been made. I think they're trying to figure out how to maximize the rollout. I would be very shocked if they didn't pick Kamala Harris just because she has been on the debate stage. She has been vetted. She's been scrutinized. She has a record. There might be some people on the progressive side that are somewhat reticent about her record, but it doesn't matter because no matter who Biden picks, the Republicans are going to try to smear that person as a radical leftist, Antifa, you know, fire-breathing Marxists. So,
yeah, you're right. You're right, Dan.
Okay, we have a lot of letters. Do you want me to start with nice ones, or do you want me to start with the mean one?
Mean ones.
Okay, wow, you, just asking for it. Okay,
bring it.
All right, David says, your rhetoric about this whole white supremacist rant just isn't true and is inflammatory. You are not helping the Democratic cause, and they will lose again because your views are not mainstream for either party, Dem or Republican. And Kamala Harris will not balance the ticket. She came across as arrogant and turned off the public during the debates. Insulting Biden on stage did not help. Why put a senator from California on the ticket? How many votes will that win in other red states, which, by the way, are the states Biden needs to carry to win? I'm sorry, but the more I listen, the more discouraged I get. Another 4 years of Trump are coming. You have no one to blame but yourselves.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Take off your MAGA hat and yeah. You know, listen with both ears. You can't look at anything that has been coming down the pike in terms of immigration, in terms of policy around the cities, around law enforcement in the past 3.5 years or almost 4 years now, and not say that it was maybe once tinged with racism, but now it's just full on misogyny, racism, and nativism. I'm sorry.
Yep.
You need to get another lens through which to look at the world.
Malcolm.
I just find it absolutely fascinating when I have these, you know, either hard right libertarians or hard left libertarians who write in and they make it sound like, you know, they're giving us advice. First off, as an African-American man, your advice is no longer welcome. Okay, we've seen what's happened when I get advice with people about how we should, you know, even when we're nice around the cops, people shoot us. So, you know, it's with Donald Trump, I no longer will never call that man a racist white supremacist in the White House. I mean, he is literally said it out loud. Practically the only thing he's missed, you know, is the epitaph that we all know is on the tip of his lips. So we're not going to lose because of the way that we view Donald Trump's nativism or white supremacy or his tribalism. And I always emphasize tribalism because he has harnessed the belief that they are the dominant tribe. White males in golf pants are the dominant tribe, and that everyone else should be beneath them, and that he will rule for 40% of the country and he will dominate the other 60% of the country using that. I've seen that in third world dictatorships I've done intelligence and military operations on over 30 years. Okay, be these small-minded dictators. Donald Trump is a dictator. One last thing. You know, he's the most documented liar in history right now. I mean, 20, where they can, every time he opens his mouth, they can show you it's a lie. I mean, we would have to go back and scrub everything Hitler said or Stalin said to see whether they beat him out. But right now, I mean, this is the man that 40% of this nation thinks is so great that his own ego thinks he should be on Mount Rushmore over Kennedy, over FDR, over Eisenhower, who literally saved the world in 1945. That's where the insanity of this is what we should be calling out. And stop being so, you know, mollycoddle the dignity of the fact that he is sullying the White House itself.
I mean, Malcolm, or panel, does anybody on the panel believe that this man has read the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or any of the foundational documents of our nation? Does anyone?
No, never.
I mean, think about the implications of that.
I actually believe he has. He knows what's in it, and that he is an evil man. And the difference is he's stupid or he's evil. I think he's evil because I think he knows what's in the Constitution and he doesn't give a damn. That's his whole approach to the world. I don't think he's read it, but
I think he's hired people and told them, read this with a view towards how I can get what I want.
Thank you.
I think it's the other way around. I think the Republican infrastructure, you know, with the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, all these, you know, libertarians and conservatives, I think they know what they want within the parameters of the Constitution. And they just tell him, are you aware of X, Y, and Z? And he doesn't care whether it violates the Constitution. He clearly does not understand the American concept of rule of law, flat out, because his entire life was, if I have enough money and I have enough, you know, BS, I can do anything. I can manipulate and influence people. This is where he thinks he's a dictator. Yeah, but this is why he thought he could call the army out in Lafayette Square, and why he was so embarrassed the next day when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff literally sent a message, a video to everyone in the armed forces saying, we work for the Constitution and the people of the United States, and we don't oppress them. Trump is baffled when he meets the Constitution.
It was after the fact. And, you know, the head of the church wrote an amazingly brave and articulate letter saying how wrong it was, yet he still did it. And he continues to do that. Everyone is saying now that his executive orders bypassing Congress on taxation are illegal and unconstitutional. But there's no challenge to it. I don't see that going into court. And he gets away with it. He keeps on doing it.
All right. We have about 2 minutes, and we have a lot of letters. I'm just going to try to get to as many as I can, rip through them real quick. Not all of them, but some of them, because we have a limited amount of time. We're off at 10:30 this morning. So I'm going to do a few of these, and then we'll go to a news break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation. I only got to the mean letter. That was the only one I got to. Carolyn says, so is the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee running ads in key Republican Senate races, especially Kentucky, to pressure them into negotiating with the Democratic senators and House? At least it would make not negotiating more uncomfortable.
No, they're not.
Keith says there is currently no relief bill being negotiated by the politicians in Washington, D.C. Negotiations have collapsed. My theory is that the GOP doesn't want the Trump virus relief bill finalized during the DNC convention. They're going to drag their feet so Trump can sign the bill 2 weeks from now and take credit for it during the RNC and control the narrative. Bob says Dan is absolutely correct. They create discord and divide the middle class and make the poor desperate, then martial law when looting gets bad enough. Bill says Trump's latest executive order, which the governors are so concerned about, is unconstitutional. The governors would better spend their energy pushing the GOP senators in the Senate to pass the HERO bill passed by the U.S. House 3 months ago. Mike says this current evolution to me smells strongly of Steve Bannon, a dismantlement of the administrative state. What does the panel know about his current whereabouts and activities? My guess is that he is in the next room to Trump.
Yeah, I believe that part too. He was still working with Europe. They are still opening their Global Conservative Gladiator Training Institute, which he is working with horrible.
You're making that up.
I am not. That's his very words. I have a section of it on in my last book. Yeah, that's what he called it.
Go ahead, Alan.
Joe, am I allowed to read a letter here? I'd love to. It's from Greg, who said, what if Ms. Harris says no to Joe? Now, why would she? She's got a Senate seat, right? She's not up for re-election, is she? She doesn't have to give up.
Well, and she would have bailed out by now. I mean, Amy Klobuchar said, I'm not interested. Don't include me. I think.
And she would end up, potentially, as the President of the United States. I mean, let's face it.
Did you read the Willie Brown? Article about him telling her that she shouldn't take the nomination. Willie Brown, the former mayor of.
What is it with men and ex-boyfriends coming out and insulting women?
I'm telling
this
you, isn't that bizarre?
It's bizarre.
Man, Malcolm.
Can I be frank? Can I be frank?
Yes, this if you woman, can do it in 10 seconds.
whoever is the nominee for vice president will be the next president of the United States.
All
period.
Right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have much more to discuss. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Armeo, Dan Arizari, and we'll be back right after this.
Good
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, going to 10:30 this morning, and then we're going to turn to all things Tanglewood. We welcome your letters in the meantime. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me go through some more letters here, and then we'll move on to other things. About the post office, Rich writes, the post office is as basic to our country as the military and mentioned in the Constitution. The basic democratic institution, the Republicans are treating it like a business in their attempt to interfere with the election. We go to Paul, who says, over the weekend, I watched coverage of the bike rally in North Dakota. There were interviews with participants who were Trump supporters. It's very clear that they're not paying attention, or if they are not comprehending what an idiot Trump is. Sorry, Alan, everyone doesn't know. Betty says, could it be that Trump is counting on the fatigue from this nonsense? Could that be part of his plan to become the dictator? We cannot let up on what is tolerable or intolerable, excuse me. Joseph writes, about 50 or so years ago, my grandmother, an immigrant from Portugal, said the Republicans are no good for the poor people. I'm sure if she was alive today, she'd also agree that everything Donald Trump does is wrong. Lori says, maybe this is a better question for Rosemary, but why do reporters let him get away with his outrageous lies? You want to take that one?
They don't let him get away. What does that mean? They report that he said it and then say it's an outrageous lie. They count how many lies, which are over 20,000 now in less than 4 years. I don't know what that means, get away with it. What should we do, censor him, not put him on at all? And that means not covering the United States. Who would be dictatorial then?
I agree with Rosemary, and I just want to say that we get a lot of mail saying, why doesn't every reporter get up and walk out? Now, you know, that doesn't work, because it's to assume that the press is one thing, one entity. Well, if CNN walks out, then Fox will have the report and MSNBC will have the report. But I keep getting these letters that say, why doesn't the press walk out?
You know, Dan referred to this earlier, but increasingly reporters are working together to show up Trump's baloney. And he has an especial disregard for women. He has an especial disregard for women of color who are journalists. And they have gotten lots of support from all the other gender and other media reporters around them. And they have. That's why he's walking out, because he looks terrible. He cannot handle questioning from them.
Yeah, that's been a trend here over the last 10, 11 press briefings, where often if during the last question, he'll just meander out and not answer.
Wouldn't it be great if for one of these press conferences, he came up to the podium and looked out on just female reporters from every news bureau? I think he would run away. I think he would conclude right then and there.
Be all done.
Oh, he wouldn't, because he thinks that he is a great womanizer and that women just swoon over him. He would welcome that challenge.
He's not intelligent pretty woman though, Rosemary. That's the difference.
Yeah, intelligent. Yeah, strong women. You're right.
We would read his original post on this over the radio, except we'd lose all our licenses.
Right. Let's go to the VP choice. We have some mail on that. I will support Kamala if she gets the nod, but let me point out she was a terrible candidate, except that for that one overly rehearsed zinger at Biden, she didn't come across close to distinguishing herself like Warren did. She was terrible in the campaign trail, and she never demonstrated why she wanted to be president. If we can't have Elizabeth, Stacey Abrams. She has articulated over and over what she would do for America. I know it won't happen, but a girl can dream.
Yeah. She can dream, because Stacey Abrams is a wonderful person. She's a good candidate. But you know what? Didn't win at the
government.
Well, you're breaking up.
You know, and clear,
Malcolm, you may want to reconnect. You're breaking up there.
I think it's the way he's holding the sender.
No, it's the app. There you go.
platform. Okay.
Here's another one. Jen says, why does he need to pick a woman of color as his VP? What if he announced his cabinet ahead of the election and chose Harris as his AG? What if he announced judges like Trump did and selected her for the Supreme Court? Representative Jim Clyburn asked for a woman of color on the Supreme Court and sees that as more important than VP. Biden needs to select the person that will bring in more voters and provide a contrast to what he brings to the ticket. He needs to appeal to all voters that sat out in 2016. Rosemary, I heard you answer
that. That could work. We've talked about that. Maybe that's why he is taking as much time, because he would like and ought to have many of these women on his VP list in his cabinet. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm a big Elizabeth Warren fan. I don't think she's the best pick for VP. The problem here is that Kamala has, I think, actively campaigned for VP. She has national campaigning experience, which even Stacey Abrams, who's my second favorite on the list, doesn't have. I think that if he is working on a cabinet list and they're all happy with it, and so far, and when you listen to the women talking about Biden and their own candidacy, they are all supportive. So if he's working on that, more power to him, but that's a lot of work. It takes months to vet people and to match jobs with people, and I assume he has to have one or two men in that cabinet, too.
Eliza writes and says, Rosemary, you know how much I love you, but Kamala is wrong. I have four kids, three of whom will vote, and they hate her. As a former prosecutor, my Black Lives Matter supporting kids think she's part of the problem.
You know, she has some new defense attorneys in California coming out and talking about how progressive a prosecutor she was. So that is a charge she faces, and it's very tricky to be in law enforcement right now and running for office, and especially if you're a person of color. So that's a tricky thing that she has to get around, but I just think she can do it. I mean, if she can't, then there is no way around it.
Look, Barack Obama chose Joe Biden, his former rival,
for
this
reason.
Job. And let me tell you something. Why? She has won elective office statewide. She ran federally. Yeah, it was an awful campaign. But you know what? She got our attention. She's essentially Joe Biden in 2008.
Exactly. Joe Biden, Malcolm, for whatever it's worth, was selected because he was not out of the fringe. He was a guy who was a moderate in the Democratic Party, and that's why he won.
Campaigning. Have you seen her in the Senate? She's just a force of nature. She has a sizable record, not just prosecutor, not just campaigner, and you put that all together, and it's beginning to look a lot like a Hillary Clinton experience. It's very impressive.
Why step her down to attorney general or, you know, Supreme Court justice, which you're not going to get unless you win this election? She will bring the energy, and I'm talking from the African American community's perspective. She will bring the heat. People want a pit bull. And quite honestly, again, I'll say it one more time. I love Joe, you know, but if Joe gets ill over the next 4 years, she will be president of the United States. Whoever he chooses will be president of the United States.
And
I want it to be somebody who can.
I think what you said before, Malcolm, is like not just wrong, but dangerous, that whoever's VP will be the president.
That's the job.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg has proved that you can hang on. The woman has had, what, four kinds of cancers? She goes in every other week for a hospitalization. She is still in her complete great mind,
but she's
functioning fully. So
yes,
I don't believe that. I think that Biden's going to hold on and do a great job.
That's
years.
I agree, but that's
fighting,
literally the job of the vice president. Is to be the person to step into the shoes of the president.
Hey, the odds are the odds. And the odds are Ruth Bader Ginsburg is outside the parameters. We know that.
She's awesome.
God bless her. Nevertheless, you know, you take a look at the statistics, and I think Rosemary's right.
Dan?
I was just going to say that, you know, to the letter writer's point, I mean, it's a hard thing to be a person of color and get a government job and not be open to all kinds of criticism. But there, you have to acknowledge the fact that that woman worked for her position, that she campaigned, as Malcolm said, that she has all the credentials one would need to win that office, and that sometimes you have to step into the breach and you have to take the heat because you have to represent your people in places like the prosecutor's office.
Right.
I mean, I've sat around the table when policy is being made at the state level. And if I weren't there to raise my hand and ask certain questions, I know that the policy would be formed and fashioned in a way that leaves my community out. And that's why it's important to recognize. And I'm sorry, I understand the woman's position because I have a 24-year-old and a 20-year-old, and they look at these things in black and white. And my only thought, my only suggestion would be you let your kids know that if they sit this one out, they're voting for four more years of the most dastardly, insidious, perverse, racist administration in the history of our country.
Why don't you say what you really
think? I learned a very interesting statistic yesterday that 46% of the LGBT community didn't vote in 2016.
Oh.
That's almost 50%. That's insane.
So here's a question, Malcolm. Here's a question then. If, in fact, your vice presidential pick or your presidential pick was LBG, whatever, that 46 would that 46 stop it, Rosemary? Would that 46% have been raised? In other words, if you choose, that's why I think it's so important that somebody who is of color be vice president. Because a lot of people came out and voted for Barack Obama, who might not have voted otherwise, and that will be the winning margin in this election.
Agree.
All right. We have about 10 minutes, and so let me just roll through some of these letters. Here's another one that's mad at us. The members of the panel today have lost their minds, in particular.
Again?
That's assuming we had one in the beginning.
In particular, who gets the prize? Malcolm. Might do better
Yay.
As a fiction novelist as opposed to providing factual-based arguments on the current incompetence currently residing, going, there are no words here.
Yeah.
Also, comments on individuals in Columbia County, many of whom are WAMC listeners and contributors, have a right to express their particular positions. Malcolm should fly his flag and vote. End of story. Okay.
Wait.
Yes?
Quick. I only spent every minute of my life defending your right to make that stupid comment. So, good on you.
And away we go. Let's see. Joan says, Roundtable is my light in the darkness. Thank you for saying it out loud. Trump is a dictator. Mainstream media comes close but never says it outright. I agree. We all need to be out in the streets protesting the USPS. The USPS, the Social Security threat, deplorable response to the pandemic. Thank you for your clarity. That from Joan. We go to Bill, who said, I was so impressed with the talent that was running for the Democratic nomination that I said months ago that whoever won should pick their cabinet from that pool. With that in mind, I hope that Kamala is not the VP pick because I'd like to see her as Attorney General, prosecuting William Barr, etc. Others could include Beto on immigration, Inslee on the environment, Yang on the environment. Don't laugh. His stipend would fit perfectly in a hard shutdown to conquer the virus. I think that Susan Rice is the best position to restore our credibility with the rest of the world, and so I'd like to see her as VP. We also have this on the VP race. Steve says, the question is for Malcolm and the panel. Why do you see Kamala Harris as the better VP pick over Susan Rice? I like them both and would like your thoughts on this in detail.
You know,
well, it
I
would
love
seem
Susan
to me
Rice.
That it'd be...
No, go ahead. Malcolm first, then we'll go. Go ahead.
All right. I love Susan Rice. I know Susan Rice. I run into her often. She just will not bring the energy of Barack Obama in 2008 that Kamala Harris will bring. It's just that simple.
All right, Dan.
I think that it's easy to then say, oh, this is Obama 2.0.
because we now have not just one, but two former Obama administration officials in the White House.
We have this from Deborah, who says, did anyone catch Trump yesterday that he was suspending student loan payments because they can't be in school? He has no idea you pay once you graduate. This from a man who has someone take his SATs. He is so ignorant about how our country works. That from Deborah. We go to this in the post office. John, maybe now postal workers will stop voting Republican. If you doubt that they vote GOP, just start a political discussion with the workers at your local post office.
Don't do that.
Please stop linking the word conservative with Trump and his shills and minions, says PJ, as they are not conservatives. The media shills on Fox and talk radio are media demagogues, not conservatives. There are very few genuine conservatives left in the United States of America.
Point taken.
Kenneth writes, 200 people...
And he gets invited as the keynote speaker in every conservative political convention in this country. The conservatives and the Republicans have embraced Trump. Live with it.
I'm just amazed they haven't changed the party name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kenneth writes, 200 people die in explosion in Beirut and the entire government of Lebanon resigns. In the U.S., 160,000 people have died from COVID and Trump wants to be on Mount Rushmore.
Yes. Good letter.
Russ says this is the long afterlife of the pandemic where it continues to ping pong around the country while the administration highlights all the spots that had just subsided. The Republican Senate is following the same playbook, refusing to offer aid until they see destitute crowds in the street, such as the tens of thousands of state and local workers now being cashiered. It all follows from making policy from denial. Why won't governors take out debt to kick in the $100 for unemployment, asks Frank. They should have increased state unemployment benefits months ago. Trump has outflanked Dems from the left on this issue as they've taken up fiscal conservatism. That from Frank.
That's funny because it appears to me that the whole purpose of this proposal was to kill any support to anybody and use an argument that the governors won't do it. So that's he hasn't outflanked anybody but himself. He's doing what he wants, which is to keep you destitute.
Yeah, it's the old arsonist and firefighter syndrome.
Yeah.
Rosemary?
Well, I was just going to say that a letter writer just assumes that the only debt, the only expense that state government has is unemployment. It certainly is an important one, and we might indeed in New York, for example, be considering an increase in benefit if we weren't worrying about how to pay for schools and health.
And you know that will result in a tax increase in your state to pay for this stuff. So why would you vote to tax yourself when the federal government should have been doing this all along?
Amy writes to us and says, could be the Republicans are hiding behind Trump to float a deal for unemployment insurance, question mark? What do you think, Alan?
Don't know.
Okay. Anybody else?
Don't know.
All right.
Nobody else knows either.
Rosemary?
I still want to
go ahead, Dan.
I still wonder about the whole
Go ahead.
Over.
Go ahead.
Dan, you first, then Rosemary.
My jaw has, you know, is sore from dropping so much. But this whole payroll tax thing and the impact on Social Security and Medicaid, I mean, do people really understand what this man is proposing, the implications of it long term?
They do not, and they don't understand.
One man understands it, and that's Mitch McConnell, and that's why we have heard so little from him. I think he's just so pleased as punch over this.
Yeah, they want to get rid of it.
We should not lose sight of the fact that this is a deliberate attack on Social Security.
Absolutely right for once.
All right. Wow. Okay.
I only said it because Rosemary was not nice before. Go ahead.
Amy. No, I already read that. Okay. We're just about out of time. I want to let's see, in 2 minutes, because I love the story. But who wants to talk about Liberty University? Please say you, Rosemary.
Of course I do.
Acting President Jerry Falwell Jr. placed on a leave of absence after a very weird picture went on his Instagram account. Go, Rosemary.
Zippity doo dah.
So, yes. You all saw the picture, right?
Yes.
There's this Christian fundamentalist posing with his arm around a woman. Both of them have their pants undone, their stomach sticking out, and he's holding a glass. He says in the caption of the picture, "Oh, don't worry, that's not really liquor in the glass." And forgetting, you know, that they're standing there, like, it's just ridiculous. And his explanation, I have to say, I could have been me. He thought it was a joke. She was pregnant and her pants didn't fit and he's getting fat. And so he stood next to her and it was his wife's assistant. Everybody had a good laugh about it. But the lack of judgment to put that out on a national publication, you know, a national internet media, is just staggering. And so he was rightfully removed from office. And I'm very, very thrilled that it happened to a Trump supporter. I think it's kind of like not as important. It's not a big deal story, but it is very fun to read about.
All right. I only disagree with you on the, it sounds like something you would do. That explanation is bizarre, I think, but okay.
It's possible it was just political suicide in a way.
It was odd.
It was.
Yes. Well, we are out of time. I want to give a quick plug. Dan, you have a great piece that you wrote for the Trolley Journal, which people can find on the New York State Writers Institute site. Tell us about that real quick, in 30 seconds.
Well,
it was just a
piece about watching New York City from afar, from upstate, and all the wonderful things that New York City has to offer because it is such a mecca of immigration, and watching the pandemic wreak havoc in the neighborhoods that I used to go through as a young man just broke my heart. And I make some political points in it, so I urge it. And it's a wonderful journal issue in general, but yeah. Read my piece. It's called New York in Love Letter to Pandemic Nueva York.
And if you just Google Trolley Journal, you will find that easily online. My thanks to Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Mayo, Dan Irizarry. Thank you all very much. Alan, sit tight. We'll be back with Mark Volpe in just a moment. We'll be back right after this.